Divorce. It can be one of the most painful and difficult and traumatizing things that a man would ever have to go through. Today's guest is an expert in this field, and he's going to give you some great advice for how to recover from it, how to get through it, and how to make that process go a lot smoother for you, your kids, and your ex.
Man, nobody but you can lead your family and yourself to greater things. Nobody but you can carve your path. It's time to rise up and be a man. Welcome to the Manlyhood Mancast with Josh Hatcher.
Gentlemen, welcome to the Manlyhood Mancast. I'm your host, Josh Hatcher, and I am so glad that you guys are tuning in with us today. Listen, I just want to encourage you, if you like the stuff that we're doing here at Manlyhood, it's up to you to help us reach more men. We have a pretty big vision. We want to see a million men reached with the message that we're doing here. So please like this, comment on it, share it with a friend, subscribe to the channel, leave a rating and a review, all of those things, because they're going to help us to reach more men with the message that they can be even better men. So you're a part of it. This is a movement. This isn't just Josh talking into a camera. This is us, all of us, working together to restore masculinity and manhood. And I appreciate your help doing that. Guys, today's guest is Seth Nelson, Esquire. I didn't actually ask him about what the Esquire means. I know it's a term used for a lawyer. I'm not familiar with the title. I should be. It's all good. I'll learn more about it later. But today, Seth Nelson is going to talk to us about how to get through divorce. He's a divorce lawyer. He's been through it himself. And he's got some excellent, excellent advice for you. He's going to talk about some of the pitfalls in a marriage, how to avoid divorce in the first place. We'll talk about that a little bit, but especially how to make sure to put your kids first, to put yourself first, and to work through that process of a marriage ending, and to do it in a way that doesn't have to be messy and hard and difficult. It's already hard and difficult enough. You don't need to make it more so. He's going to talk to us about that right here on the Manlyhood Mancast.
This is the Manlyhood Mancast.
Seth Nelson, it is great to have you on the podcast today, man. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, we're really glad to have you on. I know this is a question I get a lot from our listeners, you know, guys who, you know, they get into something, you know, the situation where they're like, all right, my wife wants a divorce. I have no idea what to do. And, you know, I mean, I'm happily married for 26 years and it's not something I know a whole lot about. And so I'm frequently kind of referring them to others, but I thought maybe we could speak to some of your expertise in that matter today. So why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself, the work you do, and how you can help?
Sure. So that situation you just mentioned happens a lot, and we'll talk about that. And that doesn't happen overnight. It happens over time. So I'm Seth Nelson. I'm a divorce attorney in Tampa, Florida. I'm the managing partner of NLG Divorce and Family Law. I also have a podcast called How to Split a Toaster, a divorce podcast about saving your relationships, which we talk about all the topics that we're going to talk about today. And I used to be a family law mediator for many years, certified by the Florida Supreme Court. I've stopped mediation now only because I'm too busy doing other stuff and something has to give. And I'm divorced myself. I've been divorced now for 17 years. My son is a freshman in college. We're excited. I'm going up soon to see his, for parents weekend. I'm going up with my wife and his mom and her husband. And so we're all traveling together for parts of it and going to be together all weekend. And we have a great co-parenting relationship, a great friendship. And that's really what's critical when you're getting divorced with kids.
Yeah, I think for sure. Cause I think that, you've got to be able to find a way to work together, especially when you've got kids involved.
100%.
Yeah. So, let's walk through that question then, man. you know, the guy reaches out and he's like, here I am.
Dude, didn't see it coming.
Didn't see. And they never do. That's what's kind of funny about it, right?
Yeah, sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. Sometimes they want the divorce. Sometimes, you know, we're going through a rough patch, but everyone goes through a rough patch. Thought we'd get through it. So on average, from the time somebody in a relationship thinks of the word divorce, it's 3 years before they call a divorce attorney, on average. So when I say this didn't happen overnight, it didn't happen overnight. It's been a long time coming. You might not have seen the signs. You're out there doing what you think you need to do. Provide, work overtime, go to all the kids' events, try to take her out for date night. Any of those things that you're doing that you think either by society or your own value system and your traits that were supportive in doing what you were supposed to do in the relationship, that might not have been what she needed. And that's where it can be death by a thousand cuts, where she's looking for a date night, but you're like, well, I'm working overtime because I want to provide us to go on a family trip. But then you go on the family trip and you're on your phone and she's looking for time with you. Like, there's all this sort of stuff that happens along the way. And when you throw kids in the mix, and now you're not as intimate, you're not as close, they take all your attention, you feel like the kids come first, you don't, there's just a breakdown in this relationship. So the guy calls me, 26 years married, didn't see it coming, I just got served with divorce papers, what do I do? The first thing I would tell you is breathe. And tell you, this is going to be like surgery, it's going to hurt, we're going to open you up, and there's going to be scars, and there's going to be rehab and healing afterwards. It's my job to try to limit that pain. And the first thing you can do, and this is the best advice I can give anyone going through a divorce, and it's hard to do, easy to say, live your life, not your divorce. If you're saying stuff like, well, should I do this because of the litigation? It's probably not the right thing to do. There's certain things we can do to set you up to have less pain, but for the most part, live your life, not your divorce. So first thing to do, get a list of questions that you want answered by any potential lawyer you're going to interview. You want to know, how many cases do they handle? How do they communicate with their clients? What kind of automated systems do they have in their office to keep fees down? What is the substantive law that I need to know? What is the procedure of going through a divorce? And the easiest way to get the answers to these questions is to think of the word peace. P-E-A-C-E. You have a parenting plan? That's the P. The first E is equitable distribution, dividing up your assets and your debts. A is alimony. C is child support. The second E is everything else, attorney's fees, cost, the process. Get that outline in your head, write it down on a piece of paper. Different states might call these things different things. That's fine. But that's all the five basic topics that are potential in every case.
Yeah, I think that the thing that men especially need to do is to, I think, approach it where you're looking at it as, okay, like, marriage is two things, right? It's a romantic relationship between two people, and it's also a business partnership in a way. And I think that when you're handling the divorce, you almost have to, like, compartmentalize those two things, because some people handle it with so much emotion, right? Where they're like, it turns into a battle and a fight, and they end up making a mess of things in the process because they take the emotion into the business end of things. Would you agree with that?
100%. There's two divorces going on in every case. The legal divorce, which is the process of the substantive laws that we just discussed, a little bit of the outline. Then there's the emotional divorce. And I know this for certain. You will never get over the emotional divorce. You'll never have closure on that until at least the legal divorce is over. Now, you may never have closure. It might take you a year, 2 years, some solid work on yourself to get over it, to start dating somebody different maybe, Don't pick the same person that you're having these mistakes with, but you will not end that emotional divorce until your legal divorce is over.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that actually brings up a nice sub point that people should consider too, is you might want to take some time before you start, you know, before you start trying to fill the emotional hole. I think that, you know, you grab somebody and, you know, bring them into your life and expect her to fill the void that you just have now emptied, that sometimes can create its own wealth of problems right away.
100%. Again, I mean, I'm going to agree with everything you're saying so far. We've got 200 or 300% already. So here's the thing. To get into a serious relationship, I tell people you need to wait at least a year till the legal divorce is finalized. At least a year. So what do you do in that year? One, if you have children, you spend quality time with them. There's no reason to invite a third party into the time you're spending with your kids. They need you now more than ever. And they need you, not you on your phone, not you with a third party coming into the picture. The other thing is, take care of yourself. Work on yourself, whether it's getting mental health counseling, going to therapy. What could have I done differently? Where are my blind spots that I didn't know I had? What do I like to do that I wasn't able to do? And I'm saying able, not allowed, right? Able to do, or at least I thought I couldn't do these things when I was married. You know, I want to go fishing. You want to go hunting with the boys. You want to watch football all day Saturday. You want to go golfing. You want to read a book. Whatever it is you want to do and you like to do, going to the gym, getting healthy, eating healthy again, whatever that is, start taking care of yourself physically and mentally and make time for yourself to do those extracurricular activities, I would call them, that you didn't have time to do before. Because maybe you don't have your kids every weekend now. That's a lot of free time.
So one of the things in my conversations with guys going through this, I always tell them that same thing, work on yourself, because like a lot of times right now, and I know that there are all kinds of circumstances that divorce happens. So this is probably the most common scenario that I get. The guy feels blindsided because she wants a divorce. Doesn't understand that if she's saying it out loud now, she's been thinking it for quite a while. So she's already made up her mind that it's over. He's like, okay, what can I do to fix this? And immediately goes into trying to save it mode.
Right.
And, you know, I'm always like, if you work on yourself, then you can, you know, get better, right? So that one, either you become the man that she needs and she changes her mind, or two, you don't, you know, you're strong enough to handle the fact that she doesn't want you anymore. And don't hold out hope for the first one. Like, work on you for right. you, not for her. But that may be an added benefit, but it probably won't, you know?
Absolutely. And some things you can do while you're still married, going through the process, is learn to make requests, not demands. So it might be this. It's going to take me a little time to process that you just told me you want a divorce. It's pretty emotional. I'm pretty upset. I would like you to, I'm requesting that you really reconsider. And even though I might not have heard you in the past of you telling me what you need from me as a husband, I'm listening. And if I'm just asking you to rethink about this, and maybe we can have that conversation. And if the answer is no, the answer is no. You can also say, while we're going through this process and we're living in this house, it's going to be pretty stressful. I don't think that stress should bleed on to the kids. So I'd like to set up a schedule where you're the parent on duty on certain days. And if I'm around, I'm happy to help. If they trip and fall and they come crying, I'm obviously going to help. But you're the parent on duty on certain days, and I'll be the parent on duty on other days. And on those days that I'm the parent on duty, you're free to come and go as you like. It's none of my business. If you're walking out the door and you're giving the kids a kiss and we're sitting down to dinner and they say, where are you going? And you say, out with friends. It's none of my business. But I'm responsible for dinner. I'm responsible for getting them into bed, doing the bedtime routine. And when you separate those parental responsibilities during a divorce, when you're living together, sometimes that changes the dynamic. One, it gives you quality time with your kids. Two, you're stepping up to the plate, which maybe is what she wanted you to do all the time anyway. Mm-hmm. And three, it gives her time and gives her space. And four, it gives you time in your space. But it also shows you're going to say what you're going to do. You're going to do what you're going to say. And if your day is Tuesday, you're doing it and you're putting a good meal on the table. You're reading the books. You're getting their teeth brushed. You're getting the homework done. You're parent on duty.
What are the things, you know, obviously you're dealing with things on the back end, right? Where they're like, okay, this is over and we need some help navigating it. So if you could, looking at all of the stories of the people that you've walked through this, if you could go back, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, what are the things that you think they could work on now so that that doesn't come later? Do you think there's anything they could do differently or better?
100%. But I want to be very clear on this, Josh. I am going to set aside the following issues that get raised in divorce that are not going to be solved by the problem that I'm going to tell you you can solve. Domestic violence, alcoholism, addictions of any sort. Okay. Those are separate mental health issues. Also just mental health issues in them of themselves. Someone has bipolar disease, right? So if you don't have any of that going on, communication is the absolute key. I truly believe that when people are married that are not suffering from mental illness, narcissism, any of that stuff that I just put off to the side for a moment, no spouse intentionally hurts the other spouse with what they say or do. They're not doing it intentionally. So if your spouse says something to you that doesn't feel good, instead of getting defensive, instead of sniping back and saying, well, you did this, and no, I did that, no, that didn't happen, and you arguing about the past of what happened or didn't happen, neither one of you are going to convince the other. It's a stupid argument. You slow down and you say, what you just said didn't feel good to me. And I know that you did not intentionally hurt me, but I feel hurt now. This is what I heard you say. Is that what you meant? 9 times out of 10, they'll be like, oh my God, he's being open, honest, and vulnerable right here. That is a true man to me. And two, no, that isn't what I meant. Right? But it's about making requests. And I'll give you a simple example that I just had with my wife this week. We've been dating for a long time, Josh. We got married in July. We've been very busy since then. So we actually haven't even moved in together. So we've lived together previously. So we know that it's going to be great, but we've just got a lot of balls in the air with a lot of stuff going on with our family and my work and her obligations. So I'm moving in and I have 2 dogs and she's a little stressed about the dogs messing up the house. So I'm moving in and I feel like she's not really helping me like lug all my shit across town, right? And she says, I've been working on you moving in all day. And I'm like, okay, but I don't know that. What have you been doing? And it sounded very accusatory, right? And she goes, go open the closets. And I open them up and all the clothes I brought over before are all rearranged. They're in the perfect spot for me. It looks great. She's amazing at organization. But we didn't communicate well about, hey, Seth, why don't you go do this, this, and this? While you're gone, I'm going to rearrange the closets to make space for you. That took 10 seconds to say. And instead, it caused a 5-minute argument, right? And it was just hurt feelings. I felt like she wasn't supporting me. She didn't feel like I was supporting her. Neither one of those were true. In fact, the exact opposite was true.
So communication is probably that first thing, and it probably solves a lot of the other issues that might arise as well if you start with communication clear and work on that. Any other issues in particular you think aside from the
daily on the communication though, Josh? It is daily, by the minute, by the day, right? That's the big one. The other one is, and this is kind of a subcategory of communication, you got to learn to communicate and talk about money. I see financial infidelity or people deal with money differently. So if you are a spouse out there, if you're a guy out there and you're not communicating with your spouse about where the money is, where it's coming in, where it's going, how much are you saving, where can we cut back because we're not saving for retirement the way that we should, those are conversations you need to have. right? I think that people feel more secure when they have the knowledge. I've had people come to my office on both sides of it, men and women, and say, my husband filed for divorce or my wife filed for divorce. And I will ask them, does your spouse know about the finances? And they'll say no. And I'm like, that's been a problem in your marriage. I don't say that out loud unless they ask me. Mm-hmm. Because when you don't know something, right, you assume the worst. Your kid, 20 minutes past curfew, you can't see them. Find me on my friends on your cell phone or track, you know, Life 365. You assume that they're in a horrible car accident and they're in a ditch somewhere. Human nature. If they do not know about the finances, they don't feel connected to you, they think that things are bad, or they think that you're hiding money, it's all negative, negative, negative. Open up the books, make sure. And if you're worried that they're going to like start spending too much, that's another conversation. How much do we need to put away from retirement? Because you tell them, I want to be unemployed one day. That's called retirement. But I don't want my unemployment, i.e. my retirement, to impact our standard of living. This is what we need to do to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. Making that plan and having that communication surrounding money, I think is, and that's, I mean, that's one of those things that is a very common issue, because if you're not being honest about it and you're not being open about it, are you lying about it? You know, and I think that can be a good question that guys need to ask. You know, a lot of times they are hiding money or they are hiding decisions or debt that they're making. And that's a problem.
It's a huge problem. And when you go through a divorce and we open you up in surgery and we look at all your finances and it's not a pretty picture, that's going to be even more of a problem.
Yeah. So we talked about some of those things that you can do to help avoid, you know, the divorce from happening. Let's say you're at the place, right? You're over the cliff. This divorce is happening. You know, like she wants a divorce. You made the decision and you're moving forward. There's probably 1,000 pitfalls between the start of that and the, okay, your divorce papers are signed. What are the things that you need to watch out for or that you need to be careful of, especially as a man walking through that process?
I think you said it earlier. This is now a business transaction. You need to remove the emotion. It is very hard to do what I'm about to say, but you cannot take this stuff personally. You cannot take this stuff personally. Because if a lawyer is taking your deposition where you're sitting there in front of a court reporter answering questions under oath, it's going to feel really personal. I assure you to that lawyer, they've done it 1,000 times. They won't remember your case. And that's the type of case you want to have. You want to have the type of case where nobody remembers it. Because we only remember as lawyers the really awful cases, the ones that went on for years, the ones where we got crazy rulings from the judge or clients making drastically bad decisions, right? You want a case that no one remembers. Just good old run of the mill. So how do you do that? You live your life, not your divorce. What do I mean by that? Interview a lawyer, hire a good lawyer. Ask them how they communicate with you, like I said before, and then ask them for your homework assignments. And if you have to get a bunch of financial information together and you're not an organized guy, get someone to help you. If you tell your lawyer, I'm not organized, can I come in and meet with a paralegal? We can log on. I don't know my passwords. Get on the bank. We'll do forgot password. I'll click the code on my phone. What can you do to make it efficient and focus on that divorce for that 2 or 3 hours and then go spend time with your kids, go spend time with your friends, go spend time working, okay? Make a list of what's important to you and why. The why is actually more important than the what, and here's what I mean. I want to keep the house. And that's a deal breaker, people will tell me. I'll say, okay, what's the underlying reasoning for that? What's the why? If the why is because I don't want her to have it, all right, well, that's stupid. But if you want me to go litigate that, we're going to have to come up with some better reasons. If the why is because it's in a great school district and we need the kids to go to this school district, okay, now we have what the true goal is. Maybe there's a way to do that without you keeping the house. Maybe she keeps the house with the requirement that she stays in the school district, right? Maybe you keep the house until the kids graduate, which is in 2 years, and then the house gets sold. So there's different ways to come up with creative solutions when you talk about the underlying reasons of why, not just positional, I want the house. Make your list. What are your top three, top five? Financial and with the kids. So when you're at your lawyer and you're at a mediation and you get your top three or four or five on both sides, don't argue about 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. Don't keep overreaching. You got what was important to you. Resolve your case.
Yeah, a lot of people that I know walking through this get in that spot where, and let's be real, and I'm not trying to be sexist when I say it, but I mean, there's ancient proverbs about this, right? Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. There's a lot of times people get in these situations and, you know, she's out for blood, or at least that's how it appears, right? And then as a man, if we react to that, right? And then we decide, well, she wants this and she's doing this, so I'm going to do this. Like, how about we, like you said, focus on the most important things and the things that actually matter and not the emotional reaction to it, because that's where things get messy.
Right. And when you do that, when she's out for blood, the way you deal with that is you go to your lawyer and you say, under the law, what is she entitled to? And what am I entitled to? How does it work? And so, for example, in Florida, and I always say this on How to Split a Toaster, check your local jurisdiction, because this is going out all over the country and the world. But in Florida, if she's out for blood and she wants you to pay for those kids' college education, that's an easy no. The reason why that's an easy no is because the court, the judge, is not allowed to order you to pay for a college education of kids that are 18 years or older. They don't have the power to do it. Other jurisdictions, I know that they can. Okay? So check your local jurisdiction. But if the judge says, if your lawyer says, yeah, you could be on the hook for college education, okay, let's talk about that. Now, in Florida, if she says, I want you to pay for the kids' college education, you're allowed to contract and say you will, but you're also allowed to just say no. You're also allowed to say, I'm willing to put money aside for the kids' college, but I think it's important that the kids know that both of us pay for their college, because I don't want to be, oh, dad did everything financially and mom couldn't. So when we put money aside, it will be a we, which means we both get less, right? We're in this together for our kids. They know I've been working and you've been staying home, but when we talk about paying for their college or anything else we're paying for, it's because we believe it was best for them. And therefore, we decided to spend less money on discretionary fun things, instead put it away for college for their future. Mm-hmm.
So when you're in that spot where she's out for blood and you're trying to stay calm and approach it, you know, logically, what other things do you need to do to again, this is not something I've ever been through. I've just talked guys through some of it and sure. Again, not experiencing it. You know, how do you, my thought is like, if a woman's out for blood and the guy is like, hey, look, I'm just trying to do what's right for my kids and work through this in a way that's healthy. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it seems to me like a good judge would see that,
you know, well, one, you have good judge, right? Then you got to assume the good judge is not having a bad day. And trial is the worst place to solve disputes, especially in family law, because it's, you don't get your day in court. Your lawyer gets your day in court. You get treated like a child. You sit there and you speak when spoken to, and it's only going to be a question and answer. So, some things to consider. Let's just take the division of assets and debts for a moment, because that's easy to do mathematically. If there's $100,000 in cash and it needs to be divided And the law is very clear that she's going to get 50 G's and you're going to get 50 G's. But to your point, she's out for blood. And even though everybody is saying she's going to get 50 and you're going to get 50, there's no question. That's what the judge is going to do. I'm making this as ironclad as possible in my hypothetical. But she just won't settle because she's out for blood. I'm going to advise my client to offer her 60 and you take 40. Now, you guys are listening like, why would you do that? It's 50-50. And the reason you do that is because by the time you get to trial and you get half and she gets half, you're going to get 30 and she's going to get 30 because the other 40 grand went to attorney's fees, cost, litigation expenses. So you need to look at the bigger pie, the bigger picture. You can't focus on this one account or I just want this because there's a cost to doing business and that cost is not cheap. So I would rather you pay her than pay me. And if you are going to court on principle, you're going to court on the wrong things. Because principle is your core. It makes up your DNA. I have never once and never will ask my client to settle on their principles. Not doing it. I'm asking something that cannot be done. But what I don't understand is why you would go to court on principles. Because if you go to court and win, and the judge agrees with your principles, who cares? It's your principles. Do you really care what a governmental employee says? And that governmental employee is a judge. And if the judge disagrees with you, you're just going to say they got it wrong. Never once have I gone to court, lost, and my client said, you know what? Maybe my principles were wrong. Let me reevaluate that. That just doesn't happen. So you're going for the wrong reason.
Yeah. Yeah, so the goal is to try to get it all settled before it ever gets to the judge, right?
Like 100%. 100%.
So that what you're presenting is, okay, here's what our agreement is. It's already worked out. And right. That's going to be cheaper, and it's going to be better for everybody if you can do it that way.
One day of trial for me is $20,000 to $30,000. One day. Because I'm in trial 8 to 10 hours. You add up my billable rate, right? That could be $4,000 to $5,000, just me. But then I've got to prepare about 3 hours of prep time for every hour in trial. So you add that up, you're at 20, 30 grand. You got cost for court reporters, cost for depositions, cost for experts. It adds up quick. Let's really try and get this thing settled.
Yeah. You said earlier, when we kind of talked about the ways that we're avoiding divorce, and you said, and you subtracted a number of issues, right? You know, things like abuse, things like
mental health issues.
Yeah, yeah.
Addiction. So
I think in my experience, I've seen those issues be very large in the reasons, or at least the accusations of those issues.
Sure. Right?
Because every divorced woman thinks her husband's a narcissist. Like,
yeah, it's amazing. I think marriage causes narcissism, like in the way it sounds.
But looking at those issues, what would you tell guys who are in that situation where, okay, maybe he is talking about me, you know, what do you do there? How do you approach that if you've got those kind of issues in it?
First off, if you're dealing with addiction, you got to own it. You got to own it and you got to get help. And every single judge that's been in family law court across the country, I would bet, has heard he's an alcoholic, and then he says, no, I'm not. He's a narcissist. She's crazy, right? The judges are immune to this. It's scabbed over. That the scar's been formed, like whatever. They want to see what are the behaviors, and the judge will reach their own conclusions, right? Don't tell the judge the conclusion. Tell them the behaviors and then how those behaviors impact your case. So if you are suffering from alcoholism, get help. If you're being accused of being an alcoholic and they don't say it that nicely in court, right? What you can do is get a monitoring device. We are sponsored at How to Split a Toaster by SoberLink. It's a handheld device that you can blow into. It has facial recognition, takes your picture, and gives your blood alcohol level. You do that for 6 months straight and stop drinking, and you do it 3 times a day. By the time you get to court or to mediation and they're saying you're an alcoholic, you've just pulled that argument right out from under them. It's done. You have independent, third-party, real-time verification backing up your story. And let's say you had a DUI a year before. Say, yeah, Judge, I had a DUI. And I realized that I had an issue. And here's how I dealt with that issue. That's a whole lot different than just saying, no, I'm not. And now it's a battle of the lawyers trying to prove it. Deal with it head on.
I think with alcoholism, that's often the thing, right? They all, like I don't have a drinking problem, they say. But okay, so can you go 60 days without it? And yeah. If you can't, then you might have a problem, you know? And so, right. Yeah, I think removing that in that situation. Now, the problem, though, are you familiar with Dr. John Deloney? Have you ever listened to his podcast or any of this?
I have not.
He's a really, really great guy. We had him on the show. He was talking about how, a lot of times alcohol is like the football helmet that you put on so that you don't, it like numbs the pain, right? When you're, mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden you take it off and now all of a sudden you've got a whole lot more pain you got to deal with because you don't have that cushion around
your
life.
Yeah, I love that.
And, so if you're going to do that, which you probably should, if nothing else, to make sure that those accusations of you being an alcoholic are proven wrong because you've beat it, right? You may have to deal with some more emotional pain than you were prepared to deal with because now you don't have that little cushion that made you feel better at the end of the day, you know?
Absolutely. But that goes back to what you asked before, Josh. Like, what do you do when you go on the divorce? Take care of yourself, mm-hmm. right? Go get some exercise. Go to the gym. Do something else to fill that void, right? Something else that's healthy. You don't want to trade one negative addiction for another negative addiction. Now, look, there's a lot of people in that gym. They're addicted to the gym, but they're addicted to the gym because that's the way they're getting their self-esteem and their life back together because they've been victims of abuse or they've abused themselves with alcohol. There's all sorts of reasons why someone might be in the gym that's not great for the reasons why they're there. Right? Because you don't want to be there because you've been abused. But if that's what you need to stay fit, healthy, and active and take care of yourself, then go do it. And I'm not just saying it has to be the gym. Like, go for a walk, go for a run, go fishing, go read a book. Like I said before, anything that you like to do that's healthy, go for it.
Well, and it gives you somewhere to put that emotion that you've got, right? Because if you can't put that emotion into the court case, you can put it into, your guitar, or you can put it into a painting, or you can put it into,
100 different ways.
Going with a heavy bag, you know what I mean?
Right. Any of those are great, great suggestions. And the other thing I would tell you not to do, mm-hmm. don't talk to your friends about this. People are like, well, why? They're my support group. Go hire a mental health counselor. It's a confidential information session. They can't be called to testify. And they're there with no agenda except to help you. Your buddies have an agenda. Your family has an agenda, right? They might say it's to help you, but if it's your parents, they're worried about their grandkids. If it's your buddy, they never liked her anyway because he wouldn't let you go out with the guys, right? So I'm not saying it's all negative agendas, but they have their own agendas. A mental health counselor does not. And everybody you talk to about your case, you're just adding to the witness list. So why are you going to put your friends in the middle of your divorce in court? Hmm. Right? Get time for yourself. Talk to a mental health counselor. And that could be, look, I'm not ready to talk about all my other problems I might have. I need help with one thing, getting through this divorce.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. I hate to think about not talking to my friends about it, but here's the other end of it too. Like, have you ever, I recently had two friends who were getting divorced and I love them both, right? And I'm like, here's the deal, guys. I'm not taking sides. I'm going to treat you both with love and respect, And as they go on and on about it, then I start to respect one less.
right.
I don't want to be in that situation,
Here's the thing. And that's right. Like, look, your issues are your issues. And I respect and love you as a friend. I respect and love you as a friend. You guys haven't done anything to me. Now, if you've done stuff to each other, that's between you. Right? I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to be involved in it. If you want to go out and have a good time and spend quality time with me, but that's the goal when we go out, is to spend quality time with each other. Why are we going to invite your negativity into this interaction that you and I are having? And that goes to a question we talked about a little bit earlier about dating after divorce. Don't be on a first date and talk about your ex. Why are you inviting your ex into this conversation? And if the other side's doing that, you can just say, you know, I'm sorry that you're divorced. I would rather focus on what you're looking forward in the future. And if they can't respect that boundary to say, I'm trying to figure out whether I'm going to build a life with you, and they just want to talk about the past, it's not very interesting to me.
All the more reason as well to wait a little while, because when those wounds are still fresh, that it's going to come out a little sooner, you know?
Absolutely.
So let's talk about that, those situations, right? Where, I mean, we're all going to court, or we're all going to mediation or whatever in that process. You know, the goal shouldn't be, I'm going to get as much as I can, right? But rather, let's resolve this in a way that's more peaceful. I think that's kind of what I'm hearing from you. Like,
absolutely. You do not want to go to court trying to get everything. Because one, there's no winning in family law. In equitable distribution, dividing up marital assets and debts, the best I'm going to do on a typical case is get you half your stuff. That's not going to feel like a win. When your 401k gets cut in half, that doesn't feel like a win. That's the law. So try to figure out a way to resolve a case. So how do you do it? Forthcoming with information. Treat it like a business decision. Do the analysis with your lawyer on worst case in court, best case in court, ways to get things settled. Don't get hung up on what ifs. And here's what I mean by what ifs. Well, what if she moves to a different school district? I want the kids to be in my school district. You can solve that. Like, okay, the kids will stay in this school district as long as one of us lives in the school district, right? But so many lawyers will argue to the nth degree about in a settlement about what if, what if, what if, what if, what if. In court, you don't get any of the what ifs. It's all speculative. The judge isn't going to rule on that, so don't get hung up on that in a settlement. You can't solve every potential problem in a divorce with kids when they're 2 years old for the next 16 years. And I will tell you this, the parenting plan that people will go to trial over, or custody and visitation as some people call it, ultimately in my mind does not matter. And the reason why it doesn't matter, it's how you implement the plan. You could have the best drafted parenting plan in the world, and if you and your ex argue about it, it's going to hurt your kids. You can have a terrible parenting plan, but if you guys are free-flowing and it works for the kids and you change days and you both show up at their events and their soccer games and football games and their plays and their dance recitals, then you're getting along. That kid's going to end up better than the kid with the perfect plan that couldn't be implemented.
How do you communicate with your kids about that process? Like, what, I mean, I know, you know, that's definitely a very probably case by case basis, but how do you communicate with kids about
it's the hardest conversation you're ever going to have. It is literally the worst conversation you're going to have. Now, some kids will be like, oh, thank God, if they're older, but when they're little, so this is nothing I'm giving is legal advice today. Mm-hmm. It's all just what I've learned from experience. So check your local jurisdiction, check with your own lawyers. My suggestion, and I've talked to mental health professionals and they agree with this suggestion. You have a script and you tell your kids together. You have a script and you tell the kids together. Now, where do you do this? You don't do it in that creepy front room that our grandparents used to have with plastic over the furniture, right? You do it in the living room where they play Xbox, because then it's not going to be some creepy place they like, oh, that's where they told us, right? You don't do it in their bedrooms. That's their place of comfort. So you do it in a common area. You also are very clear and consistent with the words that you use. Mothers and fathers never get divorced. Husbands and wives get divorced. Spouses get divorced. But mothers and fathers and parents do not get divorced. So here's how the conversation might go. You sit them down and you say, let's say husband and wife, the husband says, you know, your mom and I have been talking a lot, and we have some things that we want to share with you that we think is best for everybody. And then mom says, and in making this decision, our first priority is that you and your sister are okay, that you guys are going to be just fine and better than just fine. And then dad says, and mom and I have decided that we're not going to live together anymore. You're getting a divorce? No. Husbands and wives are getting a divorce. So as husband and wife, yes, we are getting a divorce. But as your mom and dad, we will never be divorced from that role. We will always love you. We will always care for you. Where are we going to live? That's a great question. We're figuring that out. But here's what we definitely know we're going to do. One of us is going to start looking for houses. Dad, is it you? Well, we haven't decided yet. Mom might stay in this house. Dad might stay in this house. We might sell the house and get two new houses with two new bedroom sets and two new Xboxes, right? But we're going to have you involved in that process. Our goal is to keep you in the school district because we want to keep you with your friends and your teachers. But you see, it's all about the kids and answering what they need, right? That's how these conversations are best for kids, not come home and dad's moved out, not mom and I are getting a divorce, right? Look at any picture a little kid has ever drawn. Does it ever say husband and wife? It's mom and dad. Use your words, choose your words wisely.
Yeah, I really like that because they're frame of reference is based off of their relationship with you, not necessarily as much your relationship with each other. And if, especially if you've got kids, like you will always have kids together. So there's a relationship there that you need to respect because it affects them too. So,
and like I said about implementing that plan, I am so fortunate. My son is 19 years old, freshman in college. We're all going up to parents' weekend together. My former spouse, and that's another thing you can say, I used ex on this show, but when I refer to my former spouse instead of my ex or my ex-wife, I think that's derogatory. I just say former spouse. So I'm going up with my former spouse, her husband, who is amazing, and my wife and I, and we're all going up for parents' weekend. And that's how we view it. It's not her weekend or my weekend. It's our kids' weekend. Yeah. And we're both going to be there.
Yeah. It probably took a lot of work to get to that place, right?
Oh, yeah. When we went through it, and our divorce lasted 3 months, it was fast because I'm like, I'm not dealing with this.
Right? Were you a divorce lawyer at the time?
I was not. I was an attorney, and so was she, but I didn't do divorce law at the time.
Right.
The issue is when you first get divorced, you have to respect each other's boundaries. Abide by the plan that you can as much as you can. And over time, you hope that you can get away from the plan and just focus on your kid. And we were able to do that. And the way I did that is whenever an issue came up about we have to make a change or something's going on with him or whatever, I just used the following phrase in my head and I said it as often as I could to her. Whatever works best for you. Whatever works best for you. I turned over all the decision-making, like, hey, we got a few options. Whatever's best for you, I'm in. And do little things. And I've shared this on our show, too. It was late July. I happened to be in Target with my son. and he was going into kindergarten, but we were going to a birthday party that weekend, so we were buying a gift for his little friend. And they had all the back-to-school clothes out, Josh. Like, the first day, they're still putting them out. I'm like, buddy, they have your size. Let's knock this out fast. I made it a game. He tried on his clothes, and I said, how many days in the week? Five. How many shirts do you need? He goes, five. I'm like, buddy, they get dirty. He's like, okay, 10, right, you know? And I said, how about for moms? And we bought all of his clothes for back to school for my house and his mom's house. Mm-hmm. We had them put in separate bags. I called her on speaker from the phone. It was Saturday afternoon. That's not a typical time we call. She's like, hey. I'm like, hey, you're on speaker. You know, he's in the back. We just wanted to let you know we did all the back to school shopping for clothes. I got two big bags. We want to know if you were home and we could drop them off or leave them on your porch. And she's like, I said, yeah, no worries. All taken care of. That was my code because my kid's in the back to say, don't worry about the money. She's like, we're not home, but if you could leave them on the front porch, that'd be great. Dropped it off. Thank you so much. Do you know how much goodwill I got for that? Cost me $100, $150.
And all you did was take care of your kid.
That's it. That's it. It's so easy, Josh.
Instead of fighting over it. It's so easy. Yeah.
He played soccer when he was little. I played college soccer my freshman year. Who do you think is going to buy the soccer gear? I'm going to go buy it. But guess what I did? Two sets of cleats. Two sets of shin guards. When we got the uniform, I told the coach, we need two sets of everything, and I'll pay for it. I'm not worried about that. Because you don't want your kid getting ready for soccer practice and be like, ugh, my parents are divorced and my cleats are at dad's. That's just stressful. Now, inevitably, I don't know how it happens, they all would end up at one house or the other and we'd have to do the big exchange. You know, like, I don't know. I would call her up and I'd say, he has no shorts here. And I know every time I've sent him out of the house, he's had shorts. And every time he came home, he has shorts. But they're all gone. I don't know how it happens. But you have to kind of rearrange sometimes. But to your point, Josh, just taking care of your kid. Make it easy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's where a lot of people go wrong. And they turn, then I don't think anybody means to turn their kids into the weapon between the two of you. But you know, just put them first and then the rest will sort itself out.
These are things you should not be doing. You should not call your lawyer and say, I want my shoes back. Because your lawyer's going to say, describe them. Well, they're little sandals, size 3, and they're pink, and they've got glitter all over them. And I'm the lawyer, if I get that call, hypothetically, what I'm saying is, you're a big guy. Don't you wear like a size 10? He's like, well, they're my daughter's shoes. I'm like, well, that's not what you told me before. You said my shoes. Do you really care if she wears them at mom's? Well, nothing ever comes back. I said, then don't dress her in anything that you want to not come back. If you want it back, don't send it over. You're creating potential conflict. So if those are so important, either buy two pairs or don't send her over with them. Simple.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think in that situation where both of you are willing to work through that, right? It's going to work. When one of you is still vindictive, it's a lot harder. And I guess since we're talking mostly to guys that are listening, I think our advice is going to be, don't be the vindictive one, you know?
That's right. And they're going to, you're going to say, she alienates me for your kids. She's alienating me. She cannot alienate you from your children when your children are actually with you. And that's what your children are going to make the decision based upon, not what mom says. They're going to decide how they treat you. And if mom keeps bashing you and her relatives keep bashing you and they say, daddy, I don't like it when Nana says X, you can say, I'm really sorry you had to hear that. But you get to make your own decisions on what kind of person I am, right? And you're allowed to say, Nana, please don't say that about my dad. But you should talk to mom too. And then you send a nice, brief, informative, friendly, and firm email to your former spouse. I am concerned because R, not my, you either use the child's name or you say R, daughter, told me this. This is what I told her and how I explained she should handle it, and I suggested she talk to you. At no time are you saying, tell your parents to shut up. At no time are you saying, don't let this happen. I have a concern. This was brought to me. It's a concern. It appears it's troubling her. This is how I responded. Please, I told her that she could also talk to you. Please let me know if you want me to do anything else. But you can be firm on it. Like, I'm letting you know this is an issue. But I'm not. You don't say, I'm taking it to my lawyer. I'm taking it to court. You're in violation of the parenting plan. Like, that's meaningless. It's just threats. It's bombs, right? Deal with the issue.
Yeah. And, you know, don't be the one that's also contributing. Because if there's bad things that you think that your kids need to know about their mom, they'll figure that out eventually.
Exactly. You know,
when they're old enough to understand it, they'll know who was there.
It's more meaningful to them, Josh, if they figure it out on their own.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have to badmouth her. Teach them to respect her, even if she's wrong. You know?
That's right.
Yeah. Seth, this has been very informative, and I hope it's really helpful for our guests. So, you know, if you're listening to this today and you're like, hey, this is really helpful, I want to encourage you to reach out to Seth and check out his podcast, because I know he's got a lot of great other stuff there. Seth, I like to ask all of my guests some questions, and these can be a little personal. They can be, you know, all kinds of responses that we get from them, but I kind of want to hear what your thoughts are on it. So the first one is, what does it take to be a man?
Do what you say and say what you do. It's that simple to me. If you tell someone you're going to do something, do it. Right? And along with that, as I call it, paint the back of the fence. You do the right thing even when no one's looking and no one's going to see it. That simple.
Hmm. Be a man of your word. I like that. Have you seen in your life that that is your default? Is that where you head, or do you struggle with that sometimes?
Oh, I think we all struggle with everything sometimes, but yeah. I am by no means perfect. You know, there's sometimes I've had long work days. I have a difficult job. I manage the law firm. I have people going through horrible situations, one of the worst, most stressful times in their lives. And, you know, I get home and maybe I don't want to take out the trash. And the way I decide to, like, do those things that I said I would do is part of it. I was like, that's not going to take me that long. Right? It doesn't take that long to take out the trash. Don't make it into something it's not. It's not bigger. Yeah, you're tired. It's going to take you 30 seconds, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever the case is. Right? But it takes about 7 positive interactions to make up for 1 negative. So do the right thing. Be positive. Say nice things to your spouse, to other people in the office, wherever you live as a man. You know, if being nice and thinking about others and being thoughtful goes a long way.
I like that. Seth, you can somehow suspend the laws of physics and time and space and go back to visit the 10-year-old version of yourself and have a conversation with him. What are you going to tell him?
Buy Apple when it was at $1. No. Put all your money on this horse for the Kentucky Derby. Right? No. Couple things on this one. This is a great question, Josh, is, don't be afraid to make mistakes, because that's where you're going to do your best learning. Also, and this is financial, live within your means and save your money, because I see a lot of people that do not do that. And pay yourself first, because that shiny toy that you want when you're 10, you're going to want other things that are going to be much more important to you when you're 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80. Right. And having that delayed gratification, especially in our society today, would be the messages I'd be given. And put in the work. The decisions you make when you're in high school and the friends you hang out with impact where you go to college. What you do in college impacts your life afterwards. And you don't have to figure it all out. I was a wanderer for a while. I figured it out. But, you know, don't be afraid to make mistakes. Pay yourself first and put in the work. Hmm.
Do you think young Seth would have listened?
Hell no.
That's always the thing that totally throws off the whole argument, right? Like,
it's a great question.
Anyway, right?
In fact, I'm sure people told me that. Right. No, if they would have told me, you know, put all my money on that horse on the Kentucky Derby, I might have listened to that one.
All right, Seth, what is your best advice for the men listening today?
Don't take yourself too seriously. Laugh a lot. If you're going through a divorce, yes, it's serious, but don't take yourself too seriously. People get all wound up and do not care at all what other people think of you. Because first off, in the amount of time in your day, if you just think about your day, how often do you really think about other people? You don't. It's not that much time. So I always tell people, you shouldn't care and you have no right to know what other people think about you. And people will tell me, but it's about me. I should know. So what? Who cares what they think? There's your character, right? That you have to really be who you are. And there's your reputation. Those might not line up. Some people might think you're a great guy and you're not. Some people might think you're horrible, but you're a great guy. So don't worry about what people think about you. Just do the right thing.
I like that, man. That's good. That's really good. I should get that on a t-shirt.
I'm a lawyer, man. Nothing I say will fit on a t-shirt.
Well, Seth, if our guys want to connect with you and you know, listen to the podcast that you're putting out and connect with the work you're doing, what's the best way for them to connect?
For the podcast, just Google how to split a toaster. You will find it. And wherever you get your download and listen to your podcast, we're all over the place. If you're looking for my law firm, it's nelsonlg.com. Nelson, NelsonLG.com. Or if you just Google Seth Nelson Divorce Attorney Tampa, we'll be all over the place there too.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you being on the Manlyhood Mancast today, and your insights are very helpful. And it's good stuff, man. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Seth, thank you so much for being our guest today. Guys, I want to encourage you to check out the show notes and go support the work he's doing. If this is something that's helpful to you, go check it out. Make sure you let him know that you saw this episode and that you appreciated the information that he gave us today. Guys, I just want to tell you how much you matter to me, how much you matter to Manlyhood. You guys listening and being a part of this and interacting with what we're doing. Yeah, this is a movement. Guys, and I want to thank you for being a part of that movement. That movement starts in your own home. That movement starts in your own soul. So take it seriously. Let's become even better men together. I want to encourage you guys to join our private Facebook group, the Manlyhood Man Cave. It's where we can connect, where we can grow, where we can really become the men we were meant to be, because we've got each other's backs there. We can encourage each other. We can learn from each other. We don't have to agree on everything to learn from each other. So let's go do that. So join that Manlyhood Man Cave on Facebook. But guys, again, I just want to thank you for tuning in. I love you. I'm proud of you. And I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Manlyhood Man Cast. If you want to be a better husband, father, leader, a better man, you need to join our private Facebook group, the Manlyhood Man Cave. Join today. Please help us out with a like, comment, share, and subscribe. And check us out at manlyhood.com.